All right, guys, welcome to episode 14. Really hope you like it. I cover a lot of ground here. We talk about the Grand National Truck Show and a few other adventures I had along the way. And it's kind of a longish episode, so I'm just going to let you guys get into it. And I appreciate you giving me, you know, the time, your time, and checking me out. And as always, you know, thanks if you're following me on Facebook. I appreciate that. If you're not following on my Instagram yet, I do post similar. There's some unique content there. So, you know, if you're on Instagram, it's give me a shot. It's the lowered HMFIC on that platform. And, you know, I do some longer format stuff on my website if you ever are looking, you know, bored at work. Looking to kill time and you want to, you know, see a longer format post. I do post those on thelord.com, and I started a Patreon. I'm still not super sure what I'm going to do with it. I think if I can get these podcasts going out with more regularity, I'll do maybe special access to my t-shirt drop, which I'm hoping will be soon, and stickers as they come out. So maybe that's where I'll start. But anyway, episode 14. Hope you guys like it. So, all right, guys. So I'm about to tell you about my experience at Top Rank on my last visit down to LA for Grand National Truck Show. It was one of my side trips that was really important for me to finally make. And I make a huge mistake, which I know you JDM guys are going to be super upset about if I don't correct it. So I'm going to correct it before you hear it. So when you hear it, you can't be mad. Although I'm sure you still will be, some of you anyway. So I make the mistake of saying the Nissan Skylines get bigger physically as the vehicles are older. What I obviously meant was they get bigger as they get newer. So R32, R33, R34, you know, progressively R33 is bigger than a 32, 34 is bigger than a 33 interior wise. And well, just physically overall. They get bigger as they get newer. But anyway, correction made. Moving on. Here is my visit to Top Rank. Hope you guys like it. Okay. So yesterday was pretty incredible. I normally, when I come down to LA, come down with extra guys. You know, I'm normally... we're going to Grand National or going to Ventura Nationals. And this time it just worked out that I was coming down early and I was on my own. So I did all the shit that I have been wanting to do, which was really great. I do wish there was somebody had been with me. Obviously, you know, an experience like that is better when shared, but it was such a good day. I came in Thursday night, so I got up early Friday, and the first place I hit was Top Rank. And I want to say thanks to Aaron. He was so cool. I didn't have an appointment. All the guys at Top Rank were just phenomenal. If you don't know what Top Rank is they are a JDM car importer. So while they do have inventory, and trust me, more than likely in their inventory is the shit you're looking for. But if they don't, oddly, you can put in a request, you know, like, this is what I want, this is what year I want, and like, this is the color I want, you know, everything, basically. And they'll scour the Japanese automotive auctions and buy it and import it. But where Top Rank separates itself is, you know, they've been doing this for a really long time. So they've got everything dialed in, and they've got some mechanics on site from Japan. So, I mean, they don't fuck around. And if you live in California like I do, it's really hard to get a JDM car registered here, even if it's at the 25-year mark, which makes it legal. There's still a bunch of work that has to be done and, you know, hoops you have to jump through and inspections and inspectors you have to dick around with. And if you buy it from Top Rank, they do all that shit for you. So not only do you have the JDM dream car that you've been wanting since you were a kid, but it's legal in California. And I mean, I like to goof around as much as any guy, but I live in Cali, and I put my kids in my cars, and you know, if
the last thing I want to have to worry about if I'm out driving around one of my vehicles is getting pulled over and then having it impounded or having it, you know, having to fix shit because California says that it isn't the way it's got to be, or, you know. Anyway, Top Rank handles all of that shit for you. And they do it a little bit, they do it cheaper than, you know, if you were to do it on your own. You know, or to go to other shops and just have that service specifically done, because they're putting it in as part of the overall servicing they do when they bring a car in from Japan. They cut you a break. So anyway, if you want a JDM car, check out Top Rank Importers. They're super rad. Unfortunately for me, they were so nice. They let me sit in a few of the cars, and now I know that I fit in an R32, an R33, an R34. Obviously, they get bigger as they get older. But I do fit in the R32, and that's kind of the one that pulls at my particular heartstrings. They also had a couple Mark IV Supras, which is my other, like, you know, JDM hero car that I always wanted. And sadly, like, because of the way I have to sit in it, I guess they service taller clients, and so they're real familiar with, you know, what secret kung fu combo you have to do in order to get the most room out of the specific packages. So tried to sit in a stock one and it was tight, and the guy immediately was like, okay, we're going to put you in this one. This one's got a Recaro, but it's on this kind of a seat rail, and, you know, so on and so forth. And I got in it and I was like, oh shit, this is, like, you know, way roomier, more comfortable, everything. And they're like, okay, and then we make this change and it moves the steering wheel this way. And, you know, like, they've got that shit down. So I had a fantastic time. I absolutely fell in love with this light silver R32 on a set of gold wheels. I am sorry, guys. I know there's a bunch of you that are super hardcore JDM guys, and I wouldn't say that this experience was wasted on me, but I wish one of you guys had been with me, because you would have appreciated it and understood way more. But now that I've had such drastic weight loss, and I said, you know, part of the goal, or part of what, other than, you know, being around for my family, part of what motivated me and is motivating me to keep pursuing this is that, you know, I've always been a big guy, and I've never been able to have a Camaro or a Mustang or a Porsche or, you know, one of those sporty cars, because I just, you know, I wasn't comfortable. I just didn't fit in them. And now I'm getting to the point where I do. And I'm also at a point in my life where, you know, some of that stuff might be semi-affordable. So I don't know. It's really interesting. I was really excited to drive a Mustang last year when I came down, and be so comfortable in it. And, you know, going to the events that I go to, I've started to think, you know, am I a Mustang guy? You know, am I a Camaro guy? I've always had big customs or, you know, lowrider or, you know, trucks. And now that I fit in them, I'm like, is that really what I want? Or, you know, I've never owned a Japanese vehicle. I mean, other than my Tacoma mini truck. So it's definitely something that's on my radar. And, you know, reading everything that I've read about the GTRs, the 32, 33, 34, I mean, Supras, everybody, I mean, there's a reason why there's a, is that a Supra meme? I mean, the amount of power that you can pull out of that six is just ridiculous. And they're incredibly reliable for the, you know, as long as you don't go cheap on your parts, but like anything else. So it's definitely something I'm considering, but yeah, you got to check them out. It was so cool. And I would definitely ask for Aaron, although any of the guys that every guy I talked to was pretty great. So yeah, Top Rank. So cool that I got to do that. And I'm definitely looking forward to doing it again. You know, next time I come down with maybe one of my buddies that's more into the JDM lifestyle, so you know they'll really appreciate it. Check them out. So we're all guilty of jumping to conclusions. I have a better than average imagination, and it certainly led me to jumping to some conclusions. And this is kind of an example of that. So on this recent trip down to LA, I finally got to stay in the Sheraton that's on the same grounds as Ventura Fairgrounds. I've always wanted to stay there. Normally, when I go to things like Grand National Roadster Show or, you know, anything, you know, that I've always wanted to stay at that spot. And I normally go down with a group of guys. And of course, everybody's got their own, you know, ideas of where they want to stay or how much they want to spend or so on and so forth. And so I just, for whatever reason, it's just never come to fruition. And this time it did. So it was really cool. I got a room there and I showed up and, you know, I checked in and I get in the room and I'm like, okay, so that's what this is. You know, it's not anything crazy special. It's just one of those things. It is a nice hotel, but it's not the Taj Mahal. So I get there and the first thing I do is I walk out, you know, I put all my shit in the room and kind of get that situated. And then I go down and I look at the pool and the spa and I'm like, all right, I'm definitely doing that whole spa thing. Like that, especially after walking through a show, like sitting in a spa sounds like amazing. Unfortunately, I am very broken body wise. So, that was a huge selling point for me. So I go back up to the room and, just as I like lay down on the bed, like literally like, as my head is not fully finished making a dent in the pillow, I start hearing this like slow, smooth, like leather sofa-y smooth jazz shit, which is not my jam at all. But I was like, you know, confused at first. I'm like, am I really hearing that shit? Like, what is happening? And I'm just kind of sitting there listening to it. And then, you know, you're in a hotel. And so my mind, I was like, oh, somebody's just like put on some like music or whatever, they're relaxing. And then I started hearing like other noises. And then this chick started singing really, really, really poorly. And I was like, oh shit, like this, in my mind's eye, it was like the dude is on his back, she's on top of him, leaning like arms outstretched, like the chick at the tip of the Titanic in that movie, you know, serenading this guy to completion. And I was howling. I mean, it's just a stupid, you know, thing that popped into my head. I'm not the kind of guy to complain. You know, it was no big deal to me, but I was just laughing, you know, in my mind of like the stupid image that I had, you know, the conclusion I had jumped to. And after I got, you know, after I finished chuckling over that, I kind of got up and then I noticed like, wait a minute, like the it sounds like it might be coming from the window and I'm like three floors up. And then I walk over and it's a, it's a funeral. they had a celebration of life situation going on downstairs. And this chick was, it was a funeral. So that made me laugh even harder. And I felt terrible, a little bit, not a lot terrible, but it was, I don't know, stupid shit that happens when you travel. I thought it was funny and that you guys would get a kick out of it. So anyway, that was my initial introduction to staying at the Sheraton in Ventura. But it was a good stay, and that was a fantastic hotel. It was right there for the show, and I absolutely am going to try and stay there from now on for future Grand National events. Anyway, I just thought it was funny, thought you guys would get a kick out of it.
Well, I'm actually going to give you guys a commercial, like a real podcast. What do you think of that shit? Big thanks again to Paragon Truck Covers for sponsoring me with Truckee Verde. I haven't had a lot of chance to I haven't been driving Truckee Verde that much since I put the Paragon cover on it. They're still trying to get the tuning and computers to play well with each other for the 4LED swap. But hopefully I'll have it back soon. Not Paragon's fault at all, of course. Paragon made the truck cover, and the truck cover's been awesome. I love that it's got that low-profile, kind of old-school tonneau cover vibe. I love that when I fold it up, it goes into and not out of the bed. I like that it's made out of like metal panels, so I don't have to worry about somebody cutting it or, you know, breaking into it. And whatever I put back there is not only lockable, but I can unlock and lock it from the outside of the bed, which lets me have that shaved tailgate look that was so important to me when I, you know, started deciding to modify the truck a little bit. That's one of those old school mods, you know, flipping the tailgate handle to the inside of the bed versus the outside to smooth things out. I knew that was one of the first things I wanted to do. And finally, Paragon makes a truck cover that allows me to have a cover and that mod too, which is really nice. So if you're looking for a lockable, foldable bed cover, I absolutely recommend them. They're made in the United States, which is super important to me. And if you go to their website and you make a purchase and you type in the lowered 15, you get 15% discount. So it's pretty cool. Thanks again, Paragon. And if you need a truck cover, check them out. So at this point, I'm back home from LA, from the Grand National Truck Show, and I wanted to take some time and think about this part because I think people don't take enough time to be kind. I don't think people, you know, everybody's quick to be shitty. I don't know why that seems to be the trend, and I don't know why that seems to be what the algorithms all want to promote. Everybody, you know, if I was to sit here and start bitching about something or like really dragging some company through the mud that I felt did me wrong, I'm sure this would be a much more popular podcast. But that's just not my way. I mean, not that I don't tell it like it is, but, you know, if sometimes shit is not cool, you know, and I will say, you know, if something goes wrong, it goes wrong. Anybody that follows me knows I do that. But I'm not like vengeful about it. You know, I'm not that dude. Anyway, point is, I really want to say thank you to Matt Farah. So not to name drop or whatever, but if you know me or if we've hung out or you know, if you've followed me for any amount of time, like opening a classic car, you know, enthusiast vehicle storage facility has been a dream of mine for decades now. It's something I just always thought was, even before I saw anybody else do it, it was just something I always thought was a thing and could be a thing, and that I just didn't know how to realize or how to even pursue. Unfortunately, I don't come from money or, you know, have those kind of resources to just like buy land and build shit and hope for the best. But Matt's living the dream, and he's absolutely earned it. The guy's been, you know, a name in the industry for a long time now. And he built a facility in Burbank, literally built it for this business. And he's got, I think he said he's the only guy on the West Coast with 4-car up stackers. And as I said earlier in the podcast in regards to, you know, viewing Top Rank, normally when I come down to LA, I'm with a group of guys and everybody's got, you know, their own agendas. And, you know, you try and accommodate everybody as good as you can, and so things get missed. And this is something that's been on my list for some time. And of course, COVID, you know, threw a wrench into things for a while. So going down there by myself, after I hit Top Rank, I shot out to Matt's spot in Burbank, and the building he built from, like, you know, literally built. And Holy shit. It's incredible. If you get the chance, I don't know. I'm also kind of an architectural nerd, so I just was in love with it on a bunch of levels. And his staff was really kind. It's kind of a hard building to get into. It is, unless you have a car that's there, there really is only two parking spots that you can park in. And if they're full, like, there's no place to park. You're fucked. Like, you're not getting in unless, like, the garage is open and they let you drive in, which I can't imagine they would do. But, you know, as much as you can tell he was maximizing the building for what it, you know, for its intended purpose. But in doing so, because the envelope of the property size was so limiting, you know, the building really is for what it's for. It doesn't give you any wiggle room to do anything else. So as impressive as it was, the limitations were of that building are pretty obvious. And so it's awesome to see that he's got this other spot opening up in Glendale, which really gives him the freedom to do all the other shit that you want to do if you had a building like that. The second place, it sounds like it's about halfway, you know, in his design process. He has one building that's open and a second building that he's working on. And while it was a retrofit instead of a fresh build for the Glendale spot, and I apologize if I'm not from LA, so I might be throwing out like the wrong cities. If you want to look up West Side Collector Car Storage, you can find the addresses. But the second facility is much larger in envelope. Like it's just overall more area, and it has a ton of outdoor parking, especially after he gets the second buildings up and running and squared away. While I was standing there, he actually fielded a couple calls for guys that wanted to do cars and coffee type events at that location. So, I mean, I wish the guy nothing but success. As I mentioned, I toured his first building, was just in awe and absolutely like just blown away by what he'd accomplished at that location. And then the guys at his first building said, you know, hey, his other location, he's, you know, or they didn't say he was there, but they said the building was open and I could go check it out. And as I pulled up like and got out of my little car, because I don't have Truckee Verde back yet, Matt literally like opened the door and like stuck his head out. And I'd met him previously because he gave a talk up here in Sacramento that I attended years and years ago, where he actually encouraged me to start this podcast. So it was really neat to meet him again. And he didn't remember me, but obviously I listened to his podcast. I remembered him. And, you know, even though I was, you know, to him, just some dude off the street, he not only took the time to, like, walk me through his building and explain what he'd done and, like, why he did the things he did, you know, things that he saw other companies not doing that he felt were, you know, paramount to that type of business, really going into depth as to, you know, what it costs to retrofit a building like that. And, you know, even though he didn't have to build the building, and because of the age of the building, he was able to do some things that he wasn't able to do on the fresh build. You know, they have different limitations. There are some grandfathering, you know, when you're retrofitting a building versus building something from scratch. That shit is super interesting to me, and I really enjoyed. I could have spent like way more time. And he was super cool. Even though he was fielding other calls and like doing other shit, I don't know. I just wanted to say thanks. I had a really good time, and I'm really excited to see his success with those buildings. To watch that grow. He was talking about possible franchise opportunities, which I think is going to be amazing for him. I don't know. I'm not sure how that would work out. And it didn't seem like he had the full plan like nailed down on how that would work out. But really neat. And I'm going, if I can, should be hopefully picking up, depending on where I think we're still waiting on some parts and we had to shorten the drive shaft or they had to, the guys at TBR had to shorten the drive shaft on Truckee Verde, but I have to look up. I'd like to, if I can, I'd like to shoot back down there to LA and attend, you know, a Carson Coffee event at his new garage. That would be super cool. And of course it's, you know, it's a garage full of what doesn't fit in, you know, and other guy in spots all around LA. So even though that building had just been, or to a point where he was allowing cars in, it was already 30% full. And he had some really neat stuff in there. A couple NSXs, one of them being his. He had a Bugatti, like a 30s style race car. That was a, I don't want to say it was a kit, because I guess the only company that makes parts for those cars is the company that built that car. So it's, I guess maybe a clone would be a better descriptor of it. But it was pretty cool. And because it's, of the building layout, he was able to put like taller stuff in there. So he had a big, I think it was a Mercedes, you know, like one of those, adventure vans, you know, lifted with all the racks and shit on it. And that was kind of neat. Really nice Camaro, early first gen Camaro was in there. And then, you know, the Porsches and, you know, the stuff that you would expect, Porsches, BMWs, and a couple Ferraris and the like. So, it was a fantastic first day for that trip. I really had a great time. Matt was extremely gracious, and I really appreciated it. So, yeah, Westside Collector Car Storage, if you got something that you need stored, check him out. I'm sure his events are going to be top notch, and I'm really looking forward to attending one when I can. All right, on to the next. Hey guys, so I don't really talk about like family life that much. I keep, you know, that kind of stuff quiet and, you know, out of the lower, basically, because I don't know. I'm just kind of private when it comes to that stuff, but I did want to share an experience I had. It's my son's been going through some stuff and we're trying to figure it out. And, you know, American medical being what it is, you know, you make appointments and then they figure out if it's authorized or not to go to a specialist. And then you have to wait for the specialist. And, you know, that you go to, you know, finally get to the specialist part of it. And, basically, long story short, I was blown away by the folks at Sutter and their, you know, the pediatricians and that like pediatrician surgical wing. When I was a kid, like, I wasn't ready for the difference in experience. My kid had to have an IV put in, and, you know, they had a lady with a dog coming around, and the dog, you know, was a, you know, service dog, and it climbed up on the bed and laid there. And, you know, just, that just wasn't a thing when I was a kid. You know, you just sucked it up and took your shots and hoped that the guy putting the IV in had done it more than twice the day before and didn't, you know, end up perforating you like a sponge, which unfortunately seemed to happen to me with some regularity. Anytime I had to have the misfortune of having an IV or, you know, having to have blood taken in general. I've just always had that bad luck. But not only did they have the service dog, which was incredible, you know, seeing the change on my son's face, you know, the dog came up and like was just couldn't have been more well-trained or well-behaved, you know, but the seeing how fast that alone lowered his stress level was just, it was incredible. The nurses, the doctors, the anesthesiologists, like everybody was so kind and supportive and, you know, just like really felt like they wanted to do the job that they had to do. You know, everybody's got to have a shitty day at work. I'm sure that that job is no exception, but if any of them had had a fight with their spouse or, you know, got the wrong coffee order or, didn't get the last donut that they were hoping to get, I sure as shit couldn't tell, because they were on point. They also offered, like, hey, do you want, like, a Nintendo Switch, or do you want, like, an iPad, or... And I was like, every time they came in, they seemed to offer him, you know, some other thing or some other option to kind of take his mind off of what was coming. And again, if you're, you know, in my age range, you like that shit is, that's wild. Like, that's like another planet wild. Like, none of that shit existed when I was a kid. And I was joking with the nurses, like, oh my gosh, like, I can't believe how wildly different it is for, you know, the experience. And they were like, oh yeah, you know, we work really hard, you know, we want to make this, like, nobody's here having a good time, so we do our best to, you know, turn that around and make this as easy, you know, and relieve as much stress as we can. And it's there's been a lot of changes, you know, now that I'm a parent. And I've, you know, been a parent for a while, like, watching my kids go through the stages as they occur, noticing the wild differences in the way, you know, schools, you know, have the rules that they have, how they're enforced, things like that, has just been mind blowing to me. But I just wanted to, you know, even though it's automotive related, you know, and maybe it doesn't belong here, but I did want to shout out, you know, big thanks to all the folks at, like, pediatrics at Sutter. Like, they're just incredible. And the experience that they were able to provide was amazing. So as much as things do seem to be getting shitty, and a lot of things seem to be getting worse, there are definitely things that are getting better. There are definitely things that have improved. And I don't think we get enough of that news, you know? So, I mean, heaven forbid any of you have a sick kid or anything happens to any of your kids or you. I certainly don't wish that on anybody. And I don't want anybody to think that what we're going through or what my family is going through is, like, crazy serious. We're okay. My boy's okay. He'll be fine. You know, it was just a weird anomaly thing that we were dealing with. So please don't, you know, feel like I need any kind of, my family needs any kind of extra support, or that's what I'm gunning for. It's absolutely not. And if you're looking for something like that, or you want to support something like that, there's a ton of charities out there that I absolutely, you know, please look into, please support if you can. I just wanted to say, you know, talk about this experience, and, you know, they were great. I don't get to say that very often, so it's nice to say that. So, again, big thanks to all the folks at the Sutter Pediatrics. They were amazing. So, good news, I guess. Okay, guys, I'm going to try and make this as unpoliticky as possible, although it's really hard to, because it seems to be a very charged subject. I hope most of you, I really try, when it comes to my news, to find something in the middle. When they became a father, I really felt like I had to pay attention to what was going on so that I could, you know, do my best to mitigate or, you know, support or make the moves I needed to make to keep my children, you know, safe. And when I started looking at news, you know, really trying to pay attention, it's really been a struggle to find news like I remember watching with my father. We just don't have, at least here in the States, that, you know, super dry ass old white dude that comes out and tells you 100%, you know, no opinion. This is what's going down. This is what's being reported. You know, the sky is clear. The sky is rainy. This guy is corrupt. This guy is not corrupt. You know, little Jimmy, you know, was bit by a dog. Like, straight news. That just doesn't seem to exist, unfortunately, anymore. So I find myself splitting my time between, you know, far what seems to be pretty far left or pretty far right
There are certainly some news that I've been happy to find that is more middle ground, but you know, by and large, whatever news you're listening to is gonna, you know, have a bias one way or the other, and that fucking sucks. Especially when it comes to a situation like this that should be, you know, really about the facts of the situation and what's going on. And unfortunately, depending on what news source you listen to, the opinions being expressed, it'd be an absolute understandable to, or it would be absolutely understandable if you feel the way I do, in that, you know, when you're switching between these two sides, it almost is like listening to the news from different dimensions, you know, where two societies are moving in similar, you know, path at similar rates, and the same things are occurring, but because of the, you know, the way that society feels, the news report, it's just reported so vastly different. It sounds like it's from a different dimension or a split dimension or something. I digress. So let's just basically, I'm going to start by talking about my understanding, and I'm not perfect. I'm not a representative of the UAW. I've never worked in the UAW. I have, and to be, you know, honest and open, I absolutely have worked in union shops, as a younger guy, and I worked in ones that were great and I worked in ones that weren't so great. Now being in the tech industry, I have worked for union shops or, you know, tech, and on the tech side that were union, that were dumpster fire garbage. But I've also worked for shops in the tech industry that, you know, if a union tried to come in there, we would have laughed because it just wasn't required. Like the company did the right thing and they did right by their employees. And we all were happy. You know, we just didn't need it. You know, so I've certainly been on both sides of all the basically both coins. You know, so I don't have a personal dog in this fight, other than I do happen to know guys that work for the UAW. And of course, I want the best for them. But basically, my understanding, and as I remember it, when, you know, we had that last big recession, all three of the big three, Ford, GM, and, you know, Chrysler, now Stellantis, were basically in danger of going completely under. And they all received bailout money from the federal government, meaning, you know, if you're a U.S. citizen, you and I. But they also saw the UAW, where they could have held strong. They could have, you know, put in clauses or fought to keep the contracts they had. They didn't do that. The workers unanimously saw the writing on the wall at, you know, that if they didn't, you know, make concessions and take their personal hits, that there just wasn't going to be a job on the outside of that failure. And unfortunately, when all the, you know, the recession was over and the recoveries were coming back and the car companies were making money hand over fist, somehow the corporate side, you know, they got their benefit, you know, they got their pay raises, but for some reason, none of the concessions that were made by the workers were rewarded, you know, for keeping those companies around. In fact, they pushed to divide labor by instituting tiered pay, by, you know, using temp or non-union labor, by having guys on the same line doing the same job, you know, making, you know, fractions of each other made, basically trying to screw them as hard as they could screw them, as long as they could screw them. And, you know, that's just not right in any shape, form, or measure. It doesn't make sense to do anybody like that, and let alone your entire workforce, which you literally cannot exist without. So, if you haven't figured it out already, I am definitely for, at least my understanding of what I'm seeing going far. And I'm going to kind of tackle the high points of what I understand that the unions are asking for, and then kind of give my take on them. As somebody that's a fan of history, I also recognize that the majority of what we have and recognize as, you know, a standardized, you know, work week and vacation time and the hours that we see as expected to work hours largely come from past automotive union strikes. And so, and seeing what the UAW is asking for now, I have a lot of hope that some of that will make it into other industries as it has in the past. One that I'm seeing, you know, they're asking this, probably one of the more controversial, is they're asking for a 40% wage increase over 4 years. Now, 40%, that's a big jump, but you have to keep in mind that the reason why they arrived at that number is because that is, like, from my understanding, an average of what the CEOs have been given since the last recession. And they haven't been receiving cost of living increases this entire time, whereas, of course, the corporate side absolutely has. So I don't know that they're going to get that 40%, but I certainly hope they come as close as they can, because I, you know, see this disparity across the board here in the States. I'm sure in other countries as well. But, you know, even with the last mild recession we had, when there were, you know, rule and law changes that allowed American companies to bring money back from overseas banks with the understanding that they were going to use that money to, you know, bolster, reinforce their, you know, future-proof the whatever product line that they were offering or whatever business that they had. And instead, 201, they all, including the automotive manufacturers, they all did stock buybacks, which artificially, you know, inflated their price and is part of the reason why we're having the problems we're having now. So, I mean, I'm certainly not an expert on stocks, but if you listen to either side, you know, and you kind of put what they say into the filter of, you know, the truth has got to be somewhere in the middle, both sides have, you know, said the, you know, similar things. So I feel comfortable and that's probably what's going on. And I've certainly seen that with in the tech industry, you know, even the company I work for myself, that's what they did. You know, they certainly didn't give us raises. Everybody in corporate, you know, they got bumps, significant bumps, but none of that made it down, you know, to the, you know, the regular guy that's actually rowing the boat. So I'm for that. I hope the UAW gets as close to that 40% as possible. The next thing that they're fighting for that I absolutely believe in is getting rid of the tiered wage system and paying, stopping paying new hires less for doing the same jobs as the guys they're standing next to. I see a lot of that in the tech industry as well, you know, where, but it actually goes the other way in a lot of cases where, you know, the company will need to hire more people and they do so, but because things have changed or time has moved on, especially, you know, with what's been going on with COVID, there was that whole rush on, you know, hourly wages going up. Well, in the company I work for, new hires are coming in, you know, $5 and $6 more than what we were originally hired at. And none of us are getting, you know, pay raises or cost of life raises that equal the jump between that, you know, $4 to $7 difference. And it's a hard hit to take. You know, it's really hard to work for a company, especially a company that will basically start off every quarter by telling you how many millions or billions that they made more than they made last time. But for some reason, no matter how hard you work, they can't keep up with the cost of living, let alone, you know, give you a meaningful raise. So I'm absolutely for that. It makes sense to bring people on and keep, if you're doing the same job as the guy next to you, you should be, you know, within at least a dollar or two. You know, there, I am absolutely somebody that believes in, you know, seniority having meaning. And it should be valued, you know, but if two guys are doing the same job, you know, the pay should be pretty fucking close, I would say. So I'm for that. The next one that I'll skip that. I'll come back to it.
The next one I'm for is that they're asking for is a restoration of traditional defined benefit pensions for all workers instead of the new what the new hires have been getting, which is a 401k. And that's something else I've seen go away in the industry that I'm working in. There just aren't pensions anymore. Everybody's on a 401k. And if you go back and look at the history of a 401k, it was never meant to do the job it is now being asked to do. 401ks were always meant to be a stopgap, you know, a little bit of butter on the toast of whatever benefit, retirement benefit you had up to and including Social Security, to help you, you know, bridge the gap that everybody has always known Social Security is going to leave. And unfortunately, somehow we've been sold that the 401k is just as good as a pension, and it's obviously not. Anybody that's listening to this that's about to retire, amazing that that's a possibility at all for most people anymore, but I'm sure if your 401k has done in the last 20 years what my 401k has done in the last 20 years, I just don't see retirement being an option for me personally, unless something drastic changes. Fingers crossed. So I'm absolutely for that, you know, especially when you look at the retirement products and the way that the CEOs are treated as they're retiring. You know, it just doesn't make sense to not also take care of the workers. Who are the people you're expecting to buy the goddamn product you're selling? You know, a CEO for Ford can only buy so many Mustangs, you know, F-150s, what have you, and they're more than likely not driving any of that shit. They're probably driving, you know, BMWs and Mercedes. So it makes sense to pay the people, you know, as Henry Ford figured out, you know, it makes sense to pay a living wage so that you're creating more of your own customers, basically. So I'm for that as well. The cost of living pay increases, I think that goes without saying. It just doesn't make sense to not, for, you know, the reasons I've already stated. The one thing that they're demanding, I think, that I am the most interested in, especially because historically, as I stated, you know, our understanding of what is a traditional work week, what is traditional vacation time, you know, having a weekend, those things, I think we can all by and large agree come from, you know, the strides that automotive industry and union specifically made for us in the past. Is they're pushing for a 32-hour work week at a 40-hour week pay. The reason why I think this, the stated reason I've heard that they're pushing for this is because of how much overtime they're being forced to work, and how the plants, when they're running them, can run 24 hours a day. They can have mandatory overtime, and they don't give a shit about a weekend or a holiday. So, now that in my father's time, it was possible for my dad to work and my mom to stay home. And I know that some people are able to do it now, but I've seen the people that I know that are doing that now are not doing well. I know that ship has pretty much sailed. Most of us are, if you're in a two-person household, more than likely your significant other is working as well. And it's taking time away from our ability to raise our kids. And, you know, you could break that whole social thing down from, you know, being able to not only spending time with your kids or being close to families, families staying in the same towns, you know, all those things have changed, and mostly, you know, the good parts have gone away. You know, it's just not a thing anymore, unfortunately, for most of us. So I think the 32-hour work week for 40-hour pay makes a lot of sense. I think, especially with the changes that the automotive industry is making, heading towards electric cars, which are going to require a lot less people, they're also going to require a lot less assembly. There's just less moving parts
And unfortunately, the majority of those parts are not being manufactured here in the States anymore. And so even the manufacturing of those parts, you know, they're fighting to bring those here and keep those jobs union. But they're, you know, they're asking for these changes in ways to future-proof, you know, their positions, which I'm certainly for. Being, again, in the tech industry, I'm really surprised how little talk I am hearing of AI. You know, for us, AI is our, you know, Chinese batteries and motors. You know, just if unless things are changed or, you know, some kind of requirement or contingency is put into place, there's going to be a lot of jobs that are lost with these changes and advancements in AI. So I'm definitely watching the UAW strike with a lot of interest. I'm, you know, certainly for the majority of what, if not, it sounds like, actually, I can't think of anything that I've seen that they're asking for that I'm not for. You know, especially when you look at the disparity in the way that they have treated the CEOs and corporate leadership, and how, you know, those people didn't take the hits that the worker took in order to keep those companies afloat. And yet, you know, when the gravy train started running again, the folks that took the hardest hits to keep those companies around were forgotten. And I just don't, I don't think that's workable. I am for the bailouts when they occurred. I was for the bailouts when they occurred. I think they're necessary. I know a lot of people weren't, but you know, if you just even just thinking about it strategically, I think they had to happen. If we were losing so much industry so fast now and then, and you know, if something major was to happen, what has saved us in the past is our ability to, you know, go to major manufacturing sectors of our country and say, hey, we need these things for a war effort now. Can you make them? And the more we lose of that capability, the less likely we are to come out on top should something happen down the road. So even strategically, it just made sense. But what doesn't make sense is, as I stated, you know, remembering or hooking up the CEOs that didn't take the hits and not paying due respect and thanks and gratitude towards the workers that did take the hit to keep that company afloat. So I'm going to come out for. I'll probably catch some shit over it. It's fine. You know, everybody's going to have their own opinion. And, you know, if you're not somebody that switches between news, you know, left or right leaning news, and chances are, you know, whatever echo chamber you're standing in is going to be the large amount of where your opinion comes from. But I think anytime you side against, you know, the working class, which I'm sure most of you are part of, it always strikes me as, you know, you're siding against yourself. So I don't know. I guess take it for a grain of salt. I'm certainly not an expert. These are just my opinions. I'm sure I'm wrong about some of what I said, but I don't know. Be interesting to see what you guys think. So that's my current take on the strikes, at least as they stand right now. The last announcement that I heard before recording this was that the UAW was lightening up on Ford. It sounds like Ford has come to the table with some concessions that are closer in alignment with what the UAW is asking for. It sounds like they're going to start putting the screws to Stellantis and GM. So it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out. I also heard this morning that the Hollywood strike, the writer's strike, is, I think, coming to an end. So I didn't hear the specifics on that. That's not automotive related, but you know, it's been really interesting seeing how things shake out. So fingers crossed. I hope they get what they want. I hope it's good for everybody in the long run, which it sounds like with what they're asking for, it sounds like it will be. You know, especially with I don't know if I said it, but from everything I've been able to find, what the major argument I keep hearing against giving the UAW workers their due is that it's going to bankrupt these companies
And the breakdown, again, from what I've been able to find, seems to be between 4 and 7% of a car being manufactured. Only between 4 and 7% is actual labor cost. That's not even 10%. I mean, it seems like there's a little bit of fucking room to pay these people. So, and treat them a little better. So fingers crossed. Hope you UAW guys get what you're looking for. Okay. Yeah. So I guess that's it. I'd be interesting to see what the blowback on this is for me, but, fingers crossed. I hope it goes good. All right. So, I'm sure I mentioned it already. I am back home, from the Grand National Truck Show. Had a fantastic time down there. Got to do a bunch of stuff I've been wanting to do, so that was cool. But the whole point of going down to LA this time was specifically for the Grand National Truck Show. Very first one ever, put on by the Rod Shows folks, and I really appreciate them for, you know, honoring me by asking, you know, allowing me to show up there as media and to cover the show, and I really enjoyed it. Had a great time. It's a smaller show than the Grand National Roadster Show, which is understandable because it's the first time they've ever done it. I would say it was about a third the size. The Rod Show guys, they say that more than 400 trucks were there. Well, trucks, vans, SUVs, you know, the combo of vehicles that were in. I don't know if that's what they were expecting or if that was like over both days. It didn't feel like the show was that big. And it didn't feel like it was super spread out. Like I said, it was about the third the size. But, I mean, it doesn't matter. But it was still, it was really cool. Big congratulations to Greg Tidwell for his 40 Ford pickup that South City Rod and Custom built for him. This truck is real traditional custom vibes. It's got Cadillac sombreros on it. It's not, like, super customized. It's one of those, you know, like, they're definitely made a lot of changes to it. But the more that you'd have to really know the 40 Ford truck to see all the changes. It just, the more you look at it, or, you know, if you're looking at it with an untrained eye, you know that it's not stock, but you can't put your finger on what was changed to make it look as good as it looks. And that's really my favorite kind of custom. The paint on it is ridiculously good. It is just, it's almost, I mean, it's not, there's no graphics, there's no like wild pinstriping, there's no you know, there's no like flames or anything like that. It's just a beautiful color, and it's executed amazingly well, and it's got the kind of backlit quality like I've seen it in the grass, you know, at a Good Guys show. I've seen it in the different, where, you know, warehouse kind of situations, like at the Pomona Fairplex, and here up in Sacramento, I saw it at the Autorama as well. And every lighting I've seen it under, it doesn't seem to matter. It feels like the vehicle has, it feels like a nightlight almost, like there's a light bulb inside the vehicle shining from the outside in, or from the inside out. You know, it feels backlit. It's just a really, really kind of beautiful color without being, you know, something like crazy intense or wild. You know, it's just classy. So congratulations to them. It's a fantastic execution. I can't wait to you know, see more of their stuff. They did have three other trucks there, and each one was, you know, as good or better than the last. I mean, they're just, that shop is absolutely one to keep an eye on. So big congratulations to them. I don't know that they got the attendance that they wanted. If you were there on Saturday, it was kind of gloomy and it felt like it was going to rain. It didn't. So actually I thought kind of nice. I you didn't have the like sun beating down on you all day like you do at some shows in LA. And there were some frustrations, you know, like there always is when you're trying to shoot pictures at a show. And I guess I could have gone to the roll-in, but I don't know. I think I got my
information crossed, or maybe I didn't get the information of like when to show up for that or when the gates were going to open. I think the next show or the next time I work with the Rod Show's people, I'm going to work with them to get a better understanding of what I can and can't do. I'm kind of new to this whole thing, so you guys have to forgive me on that. I really wanted to shoot more video, but I just didn't feel like I had I just wasn't in the right place at the right time. And that's something I'm working on too. So I hope you guys like my coverage of the show. I had a great time going. I really hope they keep it going on. I don't think that they got the crowds they wanted on Sunday because it did rain. I had showed up at the gates Sunday and I kind of walked in and it didn't look like they got the drive-in show up that they did even on Saturday. And I'm really worried that that is going to, you know, make this a one and done show. But the truck scene is so big and it's growing so fast, it seems like every year. And I mean, I can't think of another segment, you know, short of like the Mustang segment or Camaro segment or, you know, the like 32 Ford segments that have as much of a following as the truck segment does. And the truck segment is so varied, but you know, it's more variety to it than there is like just the Mustangs, just the Camaros, or even the hot rod segment. So I think there's a bigger opportunity for more vendors. I think there was a competing show going on and that may be why there weren't as many mini trucks as I was really hoping that there would be. I feel like I've seen more mini trucks at like a regular Grand National Roadster show than I did at the actual truck show, which was kind of a bummer. It was mostly classic trucks. They did have a couple lifted trucks, but almost everything was of the hot rod kind of laid out style, which, I mean, obviously that's my preference anyway, but I do like variety, you know, so I don't know, would have been cool. But still absolutely worth the trip. I'm very glad I got to go. Even if I hadn't have gone as like media, I would have been, you know, really excited to have been there because it was a good time and it was the first one. And the Grand National Roadster Show has such a long and storied history. I'm hoping that this one ends up doing the same. I did of course get to see a couple trucks that I've seen before, and I got to see probably my favorite mini truck on the scene right now. It's a 85 Nissan 720 called Poison Ivy. I've seen it in magazine articles. I've seen it in video coverage of different shows, but I had never seen it in person. And I'm not sure if the mural on the top of the camper shell, it's of the DC character Poison Ivy. I'm not sure if it's airbrushed on or if it's a wrap, but whatever the case is, I don't know. It looks fantastic. It's really a cool truck. And it's a regular cab with given the convertible treatment, you know, which is always cool. And it's got a camper shell on it and the bed articulates and it's got, you know, the classic, period Porsche looking wheel or Porsche wheels. I don't know if they're actual Porsche wheels. I'd be surprised if they weren't, but it's got a lot of paint and chrome details in the chassis when the bed's up, and the interior is really nice. It was just super cool to see it in person. You know, it's one of those vehicles that I get stoked about every time I see it in a video. So that was really neat. Seeing E-Dog's truck in person, that white Ford that he painted. I've seen it a couple times at different shows, but even though I don't think he's changed it, like every time it's one of those vehicles, like every time you see it, you're like, God damn, that thing is nice. He did such a phenomenal job on it. And, you know, I'm sure he's got other stuff in the works. I've seen some of his posts. I don't know. I think he's painting a C10 now, but, you know, anyway, it was a great show. So fingers crossed they keep it going. And I hope that they're, you know, slow Sunday doesn't hurt them too bad or make them decide to give up on the endeavor. Cause I think that show's got legs, maybe moving it, you know, one way or the other date wise, trying so it's not competing with anything and it gives folks some distance to the shows, you know, other shows that are a ways away. They may be planning on going. So I think it deserves its, It deserves a spot. I think it's worth the pursuit. So anyway, yeah, that's a Grand National Truck Show. So I don't know how many guys have seen this clip. I found it really, really interesting, especially, again, as somebody that comes from the tech industry. And I'm just going to start by playing it, and then we'll talk about it. So this is Ford CEO Jim Farley, I believe. Ford CEO Jim Farley, and he's talking about basically part of why he feels Tesla has been so successful in making up the ground that they've made, you know, going from nothing to manufacturing an actual product, but also a hole that he sees the American automotive industry in general as having dug themselves into. So we'll just start with the audio, his audio.
We farmed out all the modules that control the vehicles to our suppliers because we could bid them against each other. So Bosch would do the body control module, someone else would do the seat control module, someone else would do the engine control module. Right. And we'd have about 150 of these modules with semiconductors all through the car. The problem is the software are all written by, 150 different companies, and they don't talk to each other.
Right.
And so even though it says Ford on the front,
yeah,
I actually have to go to Bosch to get permission to change their seat control software.
Right.
So wow. Even if I had a high-speed modem in the vehicle and I had the ability to write their software, it's actually their IP. And I have 150, we call it the loose configuration of software providers, 150 completely different software programming languages, all the structure of the software is different. It's millions of code, and we can't even understand it all. We farmed out all the modules that can...
So... if you're playing around with new stuff, you probably already know this, especially if you work at a shop, that does tuning and stuff like that. You really know this, that's what makes changing or modifying new cars so difficult, is there's so many different companies involved in making these things work. And, as Jim Farley said, they're, bidding one company against the other, but then they're putting all these different companies different computers and, control modules into a wiring harness that are supposed to work harmoniously. And it's really shocking how well it does work, for the most part. But if you look at a company like Tesla, where all of all their hardware, all their software is, it's Tesla. They certainly do go to other companies. A lot of people may not know that they, AccuAir in its first iteration, at least, did a lot of, work with Tesla for their air suspension systems. In fact, there were a lot of posts of guys, taking apart their early endo CVT tanks, and noticing that part numbers, matched what was available for, Teslas for some of their air suspension. So there was no surprise there if you really knew what was going on. But I think it's nice to see him recognize the issue. It'll be interesting to see what they do about it, especially as they're moving to electric-based platforms. But it makes a lot of sense for car companies to start looking to, at least partner with one, maybe not one company to rule them all, not to be too much of a nerd and use that phrase, but it does make a lot of sense at least to, you maybe become the company that requires that they all use a similar, design language, or to whatever coding that they're using to have some standardized version of that so that things flow better. And then, kind of play off one another to see, who can make that coding most efficient, and then make sure everybody falls in line with whatever the agreed upon, most efficient version of that code is.
I don't know. I think it's really cool to hear that being recognized. I think it's really interesting to see. It will be interesting to see how it goes or what they do with that knowledge, with that recognition. See what changes that they make, if any. So especially Ford seems to be, you know, they've already taken some pretty big steps with the Mach-E and with the Lightning in the direction of, you know, moving their brand to an E-based brand. Although, you know, they've also kept the other foot, you know, with the Mustang firmly in the V8s, which has been amazing to see. And I'm very, very surprised and happy to see that. So I'm not sure how they wrangle this. I'm not sure how they bring all these different companies under the same umbrella. But it'll be interesting to see if they're able to do it. So kind of a cool clip, from Jim Farley, the CEO of Ford. And, I wonder if you guys have seen anything similar from other car companies that I just haven't come across, or if any of you guys that are working in the automotive industry, if you guys have seen any recognition or moves towards some, you know, better version of standardization between all these different companies. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to hear what you guys have to say. So that was episode 14. I feel like there were some things I needed to correct in there. I will put one correction in there for the top rank. I think I got it in at the front of the show. But yeah, so episode 14. I hope you guys liked it. I really, again, appreciate you guys letting me take up time in your feeds and your lives and all the comments and the support that you guys get. As always, you know, as I said at the top, check me out on Facebook if you're not already. My Instagram, the Lord HMFIC, my webpage. And if you have any questions, I believe if you go to the Spotify, the podcast link for Spotify, I believe you can still, you know, ask more questions. And I got a few before, which I've answered in past episodes. But I think it sounds like maybe the better way to do that is through Patreon. So I'm going to look into that too and see if there's a way for you guys to ask questions, you know, or post questions that way. But anyway, episode 14 is in the books. Thanks again.